Some of you may not know Andrew all that well, but you're going to have that solved for you in the next few minutes. Andrew has been with the youth group for quite a few years here at BFA, and he's went away to college this past year. And his goal, his calling, as he feels, is to be in the ministry. And he asked if he might do some speaking here over the summer. And what we usually like to do at BFA is have somebody give their testimony so that you get a chance to learn a little bit more about the person. And I've always liked that because it's like finding a long-lost relative and learning about their life, their history. So Andrew's going to take the first 15, 20 minutes or so and tell us a little bit about himself, how he became a Christian and what that has meant to him. And then I've got a sermonette for you after that.
So last time I gave my testimony, it went like 56 minutes long. So I'll try to keep it under 20 and not go for an hour. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Andrew, as Jim already stated. I've been coming to church here since January of 2010. So I guess over a year now. And I became a Christian largely in part through the youth group here, which I'd been attending since I was in grade 8 and all the way through high school. So I basically start there, really. I was invited by Mr. Osawa's son, actually, to youth group. I've played on his son's hockey team. I played it on for many, many years. And so one night, he invited me out to the grid on Friday night. It was like 45 below. I don't know why they let us play hockey outside at 45 below, but it's Timmins, I guess. And so we had the fog lights set up, and everyone's out there freezing, and I'm running around in like snow boots and ski pants and a big hat or a big coat and like three hats and two pairs of mitts. And I had the most fun I'd probably had in a very, very, very long time. And so the condition of going to youth group is you hear Wally's, devotion, I guess is what you could call it. And so I went in, and I would go for the sports, and then Wally would get up and talk, and I'd kind of be like, yeah, cool, Wally, right? Because I'd taken the attitude of like, I'll believe in God when I see God, or when it is absolutely proven to me beyond a reasonable doubt that God exists. That's when I will believe. And so I kind of went through this phase of grade 8 and grade 9. I went to youth group, and I kind of just went for the sports, went to hang out with friends. And then in grade 10, things started to change. I would go for the sports, but then I'd actually listen to what Wally had to say instead of being off in La La Land. And so Wally would talk about very, very basic things, like, you know, God's love for you, and that, like, you know, we've sinned and that we are imperfect in the eyes of God, and we need Jesus to be redeemed from that. And so I would go, and I was listening, and it started to make more sense. And my conversion isn't one of, like, emotion and, like, on the spot. It's like, I think I had more questions than I had answers, and I would, like, argue the left side of my brain against the right side of my brain and figure out if this was actually logical, if this even made sense in my head, if it was even possible. Because in the end, when you think about it, this relationship is like having an invisible friend. I mean, I can't, like, God is there, but God is not there. It's like the blue monster I had as a friend, right? Like, that invisibility is still there. And so you have to realize, is that logical? Is that right? And so that's what I went into this whole conversion. So I'd ask questions like, how could God create the earth if he's not here today, right? When there is a painting, there must be a painter, and that painter is still visible, right? We all know who Van Gogh is, right? And so I'd ask questions like that. And I started to realize that, frankly, a lot of these questions didn't matter, because people get caught up in the how and the why things happen. And really, it's the who. Who created it? Who does this? Who do I help? Right? And so I went to 30-hour famine, which was in April of 2009. And they had Pastor Pat from Cochrane speak. And he gave a salvational message at the end of at the end of the conference. And so I was standing, there were probably 50 of us there, and we were all standing in our little section in our chairs. And I can remember Rachel Bierman was sitting to my right, and to her right was Alex Rogers. And so Pat was speaking, and that will become relevant in a second. Pat was speaking, and he started talking about how the idea of being good enough to get to heaven doesn't work. You can't, your good cannot possibly outweigh your bad. It's not possible, right? And if it's very, on the surface, it's very easy to discredit that and say, oh no, I'm a good person. But when you really think about it, when you really think hard about yesterday and the day before that, does your good outweigh your bad? Do your good thoughts outweigh your bad thoughts? Do your good actions outweigh your bad actions? The times you spoke, do they outweigh the times you didn't speak? Right? And so he was talking about how you need Jesus to get to heaven. And I mean, that's something everyone desires, to, after this life, to rest in an eternal place of happiness. And so this is where things get really weird and really crazy. So I'm sitting there, and Pastor Pat's at the front, and the room starts to go black, and I think I'm going blind for some reason. So my heart starts racing. And so I'm like sitting in a chair, and I'm feeling in the chair next to me to make sure I'm not going to pass out or something. And everything goes black except for Pastor Pat, who's talking. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to him, and I'm freaking out because I think I'm going blind or I'm going crazy, one of the two. And so I didn't know what to do. So I was like, okay, I'll just sit here and not freak out and then wait till Pastor Pat gets done, and then I'll go get up, walk, go outside or something. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to him talk, and this is what he says, this, that the idea of being good enough is not good enough, right? That we have sinned once, and therefore we are blameful, right? And so that night I came home, and again, I thought about it, and I was like, that makes sense. I understand if God is perfect, he cannot let imperfection into heaven, right? And so by that, I need Jesus in my life. And so I said four words. I didn't say the sinner's prayer. I said, that's it, I'm done. And to me, that was enough. That was me giving up my attempt to be good enough and to try my best to get into heaven and just let God work in my life. And so I went and I lived that way. I started coming to church in January of that year. And I hurt my back, actually, October of that year as well. So a lot of people have probably seen me like that. I walked around with a 90-degree angle facing the floor for a very long time. And I got really mad at God. I got very, 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 very upset at God because I played sports and I love sports and sports was my thing. And then I lost my ability to play sports. And so I just got so frustrated because you start making promises with God. Okay, God, if you get rid of my back pain, I will get straight A's in school. Well, I make promises. I don't think I could have gotten straight A's in school, I'll be honest. You start making promises with God and you realize that the promises you make they're not going to last. You just want back pain to go away. And so I was going to see a doctor in Hamilton at, the McMaster Children's Hospital. And every time I'd go down, he'd just say, looks good. Go back, come back in a month, 3 weeks, and we'll see how you're doing then. And I was getting so frustrated because I was in so much pain, and this doctor would look at me and be like, yeah, just go home. So I drive 9 hours, sit down for 5 minutes, he'd look at me, stand up, turn around, jumping jacks, go, okay, go home. There's nothing more frustrating than not having an outlet or a way to get out of anything. And so I got really mad at God. And so this carried on, and it was June, early June. I was lying in bed before I went to sleep one night, and I was listening to a sermon online from Francis Chan in Simi Valley. And Francis Chan is like he's a great speaker. He's very, very passionate about what he speaks about, and you can get that through his messages. And so I was listening to him talk, and I remember thinking, like, I couldn't do that. It would be impossible for me to get up and live a life so passionate for God that I could deliver messages like that, especially be a pastor. And so the next morning I woke up, and the first thought that runs through my head is not, oh my goodness, I have to get up for school, but rather, I think I want to be a pastor. Now, this was like culture shock, I guess, because when you go from one extreme to the other extreme in a matter of like 8 hours, you kind of step back from yourself and you think, are you sure you're thinking this? Are you sure this isn't, you're not being crazy? Are you sure this isn't something about you that just wants to say this? And so I didn't believe it for a while. I went maybe 2 weeks or so just thinking, like, is it even possible? Is it feasible? Like, can I even do this? Is it something I even want to do? And so I really thought about it. I thought about it really hard. And it turns out that, I mean, there are people all over the world who do this, right? Who go into ministry, and there are entire schools devoted to it. So why can't I? And so this was in early June, and I went to go, this is where things get really interesting. I went to go see my doctor in Hamilton, and he said, instead of saying, oh, you look good, go home, he said, I'm going to transfer you to a different doctor because I don't know if I can do the surgery on you. And so I was like, oh, joy, another 6-month waiting period. Yay. And so I went to this other doctor, and I went and saw him on July 2nd. And I was so upset because I'm going to go to Rob Galloway's house for July 1st, which is what we did as a family every year. And so I went to the doctor's, and he said, wow, you don't look good. And he said, I can have you in for surgery within like 2 weeks. And I, first thought that went through my head was, where were you like 8 months ago? I could have used you when I was still walking like this. And the doctor was like, nah, you look good. Go home. And so he said, but there's one condition. The drugs I was on, anti-blood clotting. So my blood runs, I guess. And so if they do surgery, my blood wouldn't clot as quickly. And so they said I had to get off the naproxen that I was on. And so I went on, codeine, and codeine isn't fun because it knocks me out. I take a codeine pill and then I just want to sleep until it was done. And so, I went as long as I could without taking the codeine. So it was probably about 3 or 4 days. And so the first day I didn't take the naproxen, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was painful, but I was still up and moving. The second day, it just kind of got gradually worse. By the third day, I was like, I don't want to move. I just want to lie on the couch and not move. And so I started taking the codeine. And so I took that for about a week to 12 days. And then I went in for surgery on July 12th. So I'm in surgery. And I'm obviously knocked out because I'm in surgery. But this is where I get to poke fun at my parents, especially my dad. So the fire alarm goes off. And my mom's a nurse. So my mom, she's just kind of like, reading the magazine, turn the page. Oh, fire alarm. Read the magazine, turn the page. My dad, of course, never been in a hospital for fire alarm goes off, and apparently he goes ghost white. Turns to my mom. Mom's like, don't worry. Don't worry. Now, what I would have said is, oh, they'll just throw a sheet over him and run outside. If he's there when they get back, well, okay. If he's not, well, blah, blah. But so I slept through that, and then I got up, and I met this wonderful woman named Irene, who was 64. I remember that because I sang her a song. This is what happens when they give me things after surgery. I sing people songs, I guess. It's funny because God spends a lot of time like humbling you so you don't think you're bigger than he is. And this is just one way, he did this. So after surgery, I felt really good. Not just because I was on drugs, but also because I had surgery and like the surgery made my leg feel a lot better. And so I went to get up and go to the washroom. And so the nurse says, okay, well, you have to go to the washroom now. And I said, yeah, sure. And she's like, well, do you want some help? And I'm like, no, I got this. And so I stand up, and for some reason, it doesn't click in my head that when you have surgery, you lose blood. And so I have low blood pressure. And so the blood pools in my feet. And so I stand up and I go, and my dad catches me and he's like, okay, well, we'll carry you to the bathroom. And so, I get to the hotel where I stayed the night. And I remember calling all my relatives. I don't remember what I said. Apparently my brother had an awesome conversation with me because I don't remember anything. And so I just remember lying in bed and thinking like, finally, this is done. I don't have to worry about, you know, the pain in my leg, the pain in my back anymore. And I was so, so thankful for that. And I was especially thankful that God had taken care of me when I needed it, because I don't know how long I would have been able to have gone if I'd gone to this other doctor and he just kept saying, yeah, come back in 6 months, come back in 2 months, right? It gets very, very frustrating. And so I realized that God is the ultimate provider and the ultimate healer. And he's not going to run on my timeline. I mean, if it had been my way, I would have been fixed in 2 weeks and would have been back playing badminton in a month, right? But it took me an entire badminton season And then it made me realize that I don't run on what I want. It's more like what I need. And the analogy I use is when like a 4-year-old runs up to their dad and says, "Dad, can I have a car?" Like, I mean, God will probably say, "Not yet." Right? Because it's not about what I want. It's about what I need. Right? And it's about what needs to be provided to me. And so I went back to high school, finished my grade 12, and then I went off to Redeemer, which is in Hamilton, and it's this Christian school. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about Dutch people because this school is 85% Dutch. So if I'd stayed for 4 years, I was going to get a new last name. So my new last name would have been Andrew van der Luckingsma, just so I could fit in. But here's an example. I was in a dorm with 8 guys, 8 of probably the best people there. And 6 of them were Dutch, 5 of them were Dutch. One was a Mennonite and one was from the States. And then there was me from Northern Ontario. And so we spent a lot of time just, just hanging out. It's really hard when you have classes all, like, sporadically through the day to get together and do things. But I play video games with some guys and then, you know, go biking with others. And so I guess in about November, I started really to miss my parents, especially because I got tired of eating pasta 4 nights a week. And so I started really, really missing my mom's cooking, especially. And so I went with them to Buffalo on Black Friday. And we went shopping, and then it was my birthday that weekend, so we celebrated my birthday, and then they dropped me off, and I started, like, feeling weird. And it's, for the longest time, I couldn't put my finger on what it was. But, I mean, I was sleeping ridiculous amounts of hours. I was eating ridiculous amounts of food. And so it wasn't until maybe 2 months before school when I went to Catherine and said, like, I can't keep coming to this school. I can't, you know, keep going here, because there was just something about it that just didn't jive with me. It just made me feel gradually, gradually worse than it did better. And so I tried to put my finger on it. And so I thought, well, maybe it's the people, and the people at the school are great. And so what I came to realize is that it's just, I'll give you like this. If Hamilton is Timmins, Ancaster is South Porcupine, and my school was in Connaught. Like, there was nothing to do, nowhere really to go. So you were kind of in like the Redeemer bubble, right? And so I only saw the same things every day. And so I kind of started to lose what I thought university was all about, which was getting out there, which was hanging out with people outside of your campus. But even more than that, I lost what it meant to be a Christian at university. Because the Bible calls us to be salt and light, but it's hard to be salt and light when you're sitting in a room full of lights and salt. Right? How do you differentiate yourself as a light from other lights, right? And from other salt. And so I really realized that I can't keep going to Redeemer as a Christian, because I'm not being a Christian at Redeemer. I'm being like everyone else. I'm not being different. And so I went to Catherine, and we talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And we finally decided that it was best for us to transfer schools. And so this was 2 months before the end of school. And on top of exams and end of year things, I had to worry about finding another school to go to next year. And so we visited some schools. We visited Wilfrid Laurier on St. Patrick's Day, which was an interesting experience. And then we visited Trent, which is in Peterborough. And I really liked it. It's like being in Northern Ontario. There are actual trees on the campus. It's not just cement everywhere. There's trees. It's awesome. And there's a river that runs through campus. It's so nice. And so we went, and we had a tour done. And we really just, I felt great there. And so Catherine did as well. And so we decided that that's where we would go next year. And so we filled out housing applications. And the one thing I really wanted was to kind of live in an apartment. And this is kind of where God intervenes again. My entire reason for changing schools was because I wasn't being a Christian at Redeemer. And so I applied for residence off campus in an apartment. And I was at, when I got the confirmation back, they put me in like the residence right on campus in the middle of everything. And I was kind of disappointed because I wanted the apartment off campus by myself. But then I thought, well, like your entire reason for going to school is to be salt and light. What kind of salt and light can you be if you're on your own off campus in an apartment? Right? And so I realized that it was kind of God kind of like kicking me in the butt saying like, this is why you want to go there. I'm going to make you go there for the reasons you want to go there. Right? And so, I realized that it was the right thing for me to do was to end up in residence. And so that brings us pretty much to today, I guess last week. But nothing's big has changed since then. And so my desire hasn't changed. I still want to be a pastor or somewhere in the ministry. Ron Paget came last week and, very inspiring just to talk with him because he essentially does the same thing that I want to do. Right? And so it was very nice to talk to someone who's actually done it. And I have to say a big thanks, to guess everyone here who comes here because you guys have been, giving me money every month. I don't know if you guys know this, but I've been getting a check from the church every month to support me at university. And that's been a saving grace a lot of times because, I didn't have a lot of money to spend going into university. And so having money from the church made a huge, huge, huge difference for me. So I definitely want to say thank you. And I want to thank you for all your prayers. And I just want to, like, I went to a church in Hamilton called the Meeting House, and it's huge. It's like my church, we met in a theater. So the theater I went to was like 750 people attended this theater on a Sunday. And I came back here and I realized how much I love the small church over the big church. Because I know everyone here, right? And everybody knows me. And if you don't, you're going to know me now. And so I came back and I realized that like the people who support me and the people from Timmins are my family, extended family, church family, right? And those are the people I need to be thankful for, right? And I mean, I remember, my mom on Valentine's Day sent me a Valentine's Day card. And that was like, I never got mail at Redeemer unless it was like, come to this thing or come here for this. And so I got mail from my mom on Valentine's Day and it was like, aww. Right? Or, Mr. and Mrs. Harvey, Catherine's parents, they sent me a care package of exams, right? And so, I mean, it wasn't healthy food by any means. It was all chocolate bars and Skittles and, but I ate it all. I won't complain. But like, people from Timmins supported me and that's what I have to be thankful for. And it's from this place that I will move forward. That's why I wanted to speak over the summertime because this place is going to prepare me for next year at university, the year after that at university, the year after that at university. So this place is a very important place to me. And so I want to thank you guys very, very much for being my church family. You guys mean a huge amount to me. And so I am forever endowed to the people in this place and the church itself. So I'm going to invite Jim up now for his sermon. I hope I haven't taken up too much time. So Jim, go wild.